Had a lot going on here in our community, but let's start by going all the way across the country to San Francisco, where an earlier hearing on President Trump's executive order on immigration and refugees, still controversial. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court heard oral arguments earlier this week, and we're joined now by Orange County Commissioner, Chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, Mark Dorison, also with the UNC Center for Civil Rights. Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. It's always nice to be here, Aaron.
So even if we're talking about something like this, so tell us about the oral arguments. This is one of the rare, we were talking about this before, we usually don't get an opportunity to actually hear an oral argument at a high-level federal court like this. Supreme Court's still very secretive. A lot of the oral arguments take place away from the cameras and the microphones. In this case, we actually got to hear the argument itself. So where did things stand with this?
Well, it was really a fascinating opportunity. They broadcast the hearing live. I believe that it was done by conference call. Not everyone was in the same room, which I can't imagine the challenge that presents for the attorneys. But it was incredible to sort of witness that happening. You know, on two levels. One, just getting the reminder or the refresher of how our system of checks and balances is supposed to work, that the courts are a check on the executive. And then there was just I don't know if you got to hear it or see it, but the most fascinating point was at one point in the argument, the Department of Justice, who was arguing in defense of the order, was continuing to suggest that the court didn't have jurisdiction to hear the case, that it wasn't properly before them. And at one point, one of the judges asked directly, are you saying that these orders are unreviewable? And there was a long pause in the call, mm-hmm. and the Attorney General's office said yes. And then there was another long pause when sort of everybody's jaws hit the floor. And I think that really, again, crystallized the idea of why we have this system of checks and balances, and that that there isn't power that's not reviewable. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when there's going to be a decision, but I think in the next few days, and certainly the expectation is that this may end up at the Supreme Court.
Where do you anticipate this going, looking at the arguments, hearing the judges' questions and the way they were responded to? I mean, I think obviously whatever the ruling is, it's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. Whether they take it or not is up to them, but where do you see this going?
Well, I think the judges on the panel seemed very skeptical of the claim that this wasn't an encroachment on First Amendment religious liberty. Mm-hmm. And they were also very skeptical of the idea that the state of Washington didn't have standing to challenge the executive order. So I think I'm hopeful that there'll be a positive ruling out of the panel. Again, it's difficult to say where this will end up. I mean, there's been, even during the Obama administration, there was a lot of tension about the nature of executive power and whether it's which has been expanding for decades. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are bigger questions than just this executive order at stake.
What is Washington's argument for why they have standing? Because one of the idea behind standing is you're not allowed to bring a lawsuit unless you're directly affected by the law in question or the order in question or the action in question. So where does Washington fit in?
Well, one of the points that the lawyers for the state made was that the state universities are part of the state. And so this order directly impacts the ability of the state universities to fulfill their mission to the residents of the state. And so by virtue of that they did have standing. And then not to get too legalistic, but there is precedent for sort of third parties to have standing mm-hmm. in these cases. So there are cases where spouses of refugees or folks who have been denied entry were granted standing to challenge that. And so there is precedent for a third party to have standing. The question of whether Washington has it is one that the federal government was contesting.
Speaking with Mark Dorison, again, Orange County Commissioner, and also with the UNC Center for Civil Rights, and it's difficult, and certainly in this case, this is a relevant question, but there are, and we've talked about this, and I know a lot of people listening out there probably had many conversations about this, a lot of different issues in which action is happening seemingly very quickly on a variety of different fronts, and it's difficult, I think, for people to sort of continue to separate between what is something that the president is doing that we just don't like because we're opposed to it politically, and what is the president doing that we all need to be concerned about because it's fundamentally challenging the way we've always understood the way that American government works and American institutions, and it's fundamentally challenging basic constitutional principles. What falls into that latter category that you've seen, if anything?
Well, and I think it's a great point because I think there is a real blurring of issues, some of which, like, for example, the opposition to cabinet nominees is sort of classically a political question and a political debate. The issues that relate, I think, to sort of basic civil rights or civil liberties, those are questions that I think fall at least closer in the bucket of issues that are susceptible to legal challenge. So the ban on Muslim and refugees. I think this proposal about lifting restrictions on religious nonprofits to engage in partisan political activity, I think that's one that would fit into, you know, would be open for a legal challenge. So I think, you know, a lot of the other stuff that is potentially down the line, again, related to immigration, I think some of the changes they want to make around access to information about schools. There's a bunch of bills coming about whether you can get access to demographic data about race and geospatial data that advocates rely on to challenge potentially discriminatory actions. Those, I think, will fit in that legal bucket as well.
What can local governments do sort of to push back against that?
I think one thing we can do is make our voices known and add our voices to the opposition to when we believe what's happening is going to either affect the rights of our citizens or affect the right of the governments to be able to serve those citizens. There may be opportunities where, depending on the nature of the law, where local governments could be plaintiffs in a legal action. Certainly, we have the power of amplifying the voice of our residents, and that's something I know in Orange County and all the towns here are committed to doing.
So speaking with Mark Dorison, again, chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, and let's turn to local stuff now because the board just had a big meeting yesterday, a couple of big issues. First of all, property revaluation, and that is going to affect every property owner in Orange County in terms of your tax bill, and also a big presentation on affordable housing. So what went down at the meeting yesterday?
So on the revaluation, we had a report from the tax office. The revaluation was sort of a high-level view of what's happening. So property owners are going to get their new valuations later this month. It's the first revaluation we've done in 8 years. And their county has really made sort of Herculean efforts to do the best job. We hired extra staff to help do the appraisals. We've done a lot of outreach, community outreach, about how the process has been done, what to expect, and also the rights of property owners who are unsatisfied with their assessment. How there's an appeals process. There's additional information that can be provided. So, you know, there was an op-ed in the Chapel Hill News on Sunday about this, and it was suggesting that there would be winners and losers in this process. You know, some people's taxes will go up and some people's taxes will go down. And that is true, although I don't care for the characterization winner and loser. I mean, what the purpose of the revaluation is to match as closely as possible the true market value of every property to the assessment, so that every assessment reflects the market value. And that means everybody pays their fair share of property taxes. So to me, that's good for everyone in the community. And the other thing about property taxes, and you know this, Aaron, it's one of the only taxing powers that we have as local governments that is progressive. That is, that, you know, it's based on your ability to pay. And so So it's really critical that we do this in a way that is really equitable. And I think that's what we're going to see.
And kind of the you brought up the winners and losers and sort of adjusting every 8 years. It's kind of like redistricting in that sense. You know, every 10 years we do the census and then you go back and you redraw the district lines to make sure that every district has the same number of people in it, which is the way the law should be. And you've got to go through that process periodically to make sure that the system remains fair. And Texas might pick up a couple of seats and Michigan might lose a couple, but that's what you have to do to stay fair.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, this process is going to be much less political than gerrymandering, to be clear. But you're exactly right.
You should also do redistricting correctly, and that's a whole other issue.
That's right.
Yeah.
But at the end of this process, we should have a property tax valuations that are the most equitable.
Mm-hmm. And this is all supposed to be, the idea is for this to be revenue neutral. Like, this isn't a way for the county to get more tax dollars. The property tax rate will then be adjusted.
That's right. The property tax rate will be adjusted so that it is revenue neutral. That doesn't mean that nobody's taxes will go up because it's based on the revenue overall. But there will not be, you know, a tax rate increase on top of, you know, other than making it revenue neutral or a tax decrease, but it will be revenue neutral.
Is that sort of an automatic process? Like, you look at the total value of property and you just sort of automatically adjust the tax rate accordingly? Or is it more?
Whenever there's some sort of computerized process that I don't understand, I just say there's an algorithm that does that. So I'm sure there's an algorithm that does that.
This conversation is currently, I'm recording this so that we can post it on the website later, and there are about 1,000 different things going on this computer that's sitting right next to me, and I can see it all happen, and I have no idea how it even makes. Someone came in and was like, so explain to me how the radio works. I'm like, I turn on a button and I talk into this thing and people magically hear it.
So, that's right.
Yeah. Speaking again with Mark Dorison, Chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners. That was at the meeting yesterday, also affordable housing.
So we'll yes, so as you know, the voters of Orange County passed a $5 million bond for affordable housing in November, which was a great victory for the people. Since the bond has passed, and actually even before it was passed, the commissioners started working on developing a set of priorities, a set of criteria to, you know, that would determine how these bond proceeds would be distributed, with the idea of incentivizing the types of and needs of for housing in the community. So the highest priority is affordable rental housing for low wealth and very low wealth residents. And so last night we finalized that criteria. We adopted a timeline for receiving proposals, evaluating them, and awarding bond proceeds, and it's a very aggressive timeline. I'm very excited to see that. It's the request for proposals is going to go out later this month. We're going to get proposals back by the end of March with the goal of approving projects and starting to get the money out the door, you know, before we go on our break for the summer. And then the third thing we did on affordable housing, which is I'm also very excited about, this has been in the works for a while, but we identified several parcels of land that the county owns that is effectively surplus property that could be used for affordable housing. And so 8 parcels that the county owns, 2 parcels that the county housing authority owns are being put out there into the mix for proposals to do affordable housing. A couple are in Chapel Hill, a couple are in Carrboro, a couple are in Hillsboro, a couple are in the county. And so that's an opportunity to, again, provide additional subsidy and support, in this case through the land, for affordable housing.
How big are those parcels? How many units could go in there?
They vary in size. Some of them are single lots, sort of in neighborhoods that have been undeveloped, or so maybe on those you could have one house or a duplex. Some of them are bigger. Some of them are multi-acre parcels where you could put, I think you could put some smaller multifamily units.
Awesome. All right. So the process is pretty quick through the spring, approved by the time you go home in the summer. Shovels in the dirt on some of these projects, hopefully by shortly thereafter?
As soon as possible. As soon as the amazing housing providers in this community are already have projects that they're thinking about. And so, you know, the goal really is by the end of the year to be able to see some stuff coming out of the ground.
Nice. Again, speaking with Mark Dorison, orangecountync.gov, if you want more information about county business and goings on. And before we let you go, give us a preview of the public hearing, which is coming up on Monday.
Yeah, we have our quarterly public hearing on Monday, I didn't bring the agenda with me. We've got some amendments to the UDO that we'll be talking about, and then we're also going to have a few minor work session items if the public hearing doesn't take the whole night.
And that's going to be Witted Building, 7 o'clock?
That is correct.
Yeah, that was off the top of my head. I'm impressed with myself. Witted Building, 7 o'clock on Monday, so public hearing, head out for that. That's at the beginning of next week. Mark Dorison, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's always good to see you, Aaron.